Get ready for the Warrior Mindset with Willie the Bam Johnson Show, sponsored by the American Martial Arts Alliance Foundation. Pre-order Willie's new book, The Mental Commandments of Personal Safety. Visit our website, Elite Publications. Pre-order your copy today.
The Warrior's Mindset is about conditioning the mind, body, and spirit. It takes practice, commitment, vision, goal setting, determination, sharp focus, respect, and discipline. Once you learn it, you can apply it to all aspects of your life. The Warrior's Mindset prepares you for the largest competition ever, the competition against self.
Hello, everybody. We'd like to welcome you to Willie the Bam Johnson's Warrior's Mindset. We know Warrior's Mindset is about a daily reprieve, contingent on our spiritual maintenance. It's all about taking the principles and values of martial arts and making sure we demonstrate them in every aspect of our lives, 24/7. I told you when you tune into this show, we're going to motivate you, empower you, and overcome all obstacles, because the martial arts is all about mind, body, and spirit. Mind, body, and spirit allows us to be a peaceful warrior. And the only thing that we can do to help contribute to the betterment of humanity right now is taking these principles of martial arts and putting them out there in the next generation. The beautiful thing about our show also is that I'm not going to just give you martial art people. I'm going to give you people from all different walks of life that we can combine and see how we are all walking the same similar paths, which is based upon the principles of martial arts. And as we're going forward, these guests are people that inspired me. You know, sometimes you're going to hear, you might see me cry. Sometimes you might see a moment of silence, because my life is dedicated to the empowerment of the next generation by using martial arts on all levels of entertainment. There's a great rapper by the name of KRS-One. He calls it edutainment. That means we're going to entertain you, your subliminal. So when you walk away, and as the old ancient says, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And as I'm saying that, that even gets my heart, because my next guest, and I don't think he really understands the impact that he had on my life. You know, a little kid who's just taking VCR tapes and mixing together fight scenes and forms and weapons, like in a little studio like this on my own, and mailing out to everybody, and everybody telling you you're crazy. And then somebody, maybe we both were crazy, they see this tape and they set up, call me and actually set up a meeting. And I get a chance to come to his house and sit in his office and see a poster that says, no retreat, no surrender. You remember that, Mr. Keith Strineberg?
I sure do. Yes, I certainly do.
And that's who our guest is, Mr. Keith Strineberg. You all know my story. You all know my struggle. But entertainment is so powerful, because that movie that he did that changed history, called No Retreat, No Surrender, for this little homeless man that was struggling and traveling the streets of Baltimore, he would go into a movie theater or rent that videotape and would watch that movie and wish that, man, maybe I can be like that. But because I followed Mr. Keith Strineberg's journey and knowing about how he even began to write and do all these things, I understood that, man, maybe I can be there one day. And I give you Mr. Keith Strineberg. Can we get a welcome from you, Mr. Keith?
Thank you. Nice to be on your show. Thanks for having me as a guest. I appreciate it.
So can you give people, you know, the new fans, the old fans, one, a reintroduction of who you are and what you're doing now?
Well, I'm a martial artist first and foremost. So I started in the martial arts when I was 14 years old, and now I've been in it for at least 10 years, Willie. So
10 years, sorry.
And so the martial arts has really informed my life from the start. And I was lucky enough to be a journalist writing in martial arts magazines. And then I was really lucky to work with people like yourself and other martial artists on some action martial arts movies. And then I've continued to write, and I'm now involved in a watch company, actually. I work for a company called Jacob & Co., and I do all their content, so all their writing, all their videos, all their Instagram, all that. So I'm in charge of all that. So I'm still training in the martial arts. I'm still writing. I'm working on a reboot of No Retreat, No Surrender. and looking forward to great things.
So the name of our show is called Warrior's Mindset, and how would you define that mindset in your life through your own martial arts experience? Because we all have the warrior's mindset, right?
I think so, yes. And I think that for me, the warrior's mindset is, it's not a violent thing. It's a confidence and a willingness to help others. That's really where I see the martial arts has taught me that it's all about me. In fact, my journey on the martial arts started, as I said, when I was 14, but it really hit home to me when I was living in the Orient. I was living in Taiwan. I was studying Chinese. Actually, my major in college was Chinese language and literature. So I was living in Taiwan, studying Chinese, and every 6 months you had to leave Taiwan and go to another country and come back in order to renew your visa. So I went to Okinawa, and Okinawa was the place where my style of karate started. My style was Ishin Ryu karate.
Oh, okay.
So I tracked down the main dojo of Ishin Ryu. And when I went to Okinawa, I would visit a number of different dojo along the way to my home dojo. And they would offer for me to sleep in their dojo. I could train for free. It was just such a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
Then I got to my home dojo, and the guy that was at the desk, who was the son-in-law of the master, I think, he looked at me, he said, "What's your name?" And I told him my name. And he says, "Who's your instructor?" I said, "Here." He says, "I can't find you anywhere." I said, "Well, that's okay. I just want to train here as part of my journey." And he said, "Well, that'll be $500. And I was like, "But everybody else let me train for free. Why would my home dojo charge me?" And it really depressed me, and it shocked me. And I left without training at my home dojo. Mm-hmm. And I spent the next week sort of just backpacking around Okinawa, trying to figure out what the martial arts were for me. And that's where I learned that the martial arts is really inside myself. It's not something exterior somebody can give me. It's inside myself. And that's what matters. It doesn't matter what the guy at the desk in the dojo says. It's about what's inside me.
You brought out two powerful questions. And one, I think I'm trying to word this up. You brought up, when I think of martial arts today, I think commercialism confuses art.
Yes.
There's a commercial aspect that keeps the light on, but you cannot pay for the artist's expression of what they want to give you to help you find a way to express yourself. That, do you see that as being a lost expression of martial arts now in the world of commercial martial arts?
Well, I think especially with the growth of this mixed martial arts and the UFC, I think it's become much more of a money-making operation, and the soul of the martial arts has been lost. And I think that's one of the things I think was powerful about No Retreat, No Surrender is that it really addressed the soul of the martial arts, what the base tenets of the martial arts are. And as a result of that experience in Okinawa, I wrote the first article for Black Belt Magazine. It was actually, Fighting Stars. I don't know if you remember Fighting Stars.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
So I wrote this article. I'd never written for a magazine before. I'd written for some newspapers, but I've never written for a magazine. So I sent it to them, not expecting anything. And they bought it right away. They published it right away. And that started my career writing. And when I was writing about the martial arts, I really focused on the spirit of the martial arts, the beliefs of the martial arts, because for me, that's what's the most important.
Yes, sir. I mean, this is still not my second question, but you get me pumped here. So do you believe that the chi, I call it the electrical energy of martial arts that we can't see, but we can feel? I felt that way. Well, honestly, and I think you know that, I feel that way when I talk to you. You have always been the same Keith Steinberg that you were when I first met you, even to this point. And I believe that's that spiritual chi, that soul, that spirit that connects all human beings together and can change the world. How do you think that is so important in music and entertainment, even in clothing? It affects every expression of some connection to the human soul. How important is that, man?
Well, that's the most important. I think what you're talking about is flow. When you get things flowing, you know, I've experienced that flow a number of times, and you can have it in anything. You can have it playing a sport, playing music. You can even have it when you're speaking or writing. You know, when I'm writing and I'm in the zone, so to speak, then that yeah. flow is going. And that's all about qi. I agree with you. And I think our Western society is too much focused on the exterior and not focused enough on the interior.
So from the Ori, because I had a chance to train in China, and when you went to China and Hong Kong, that's when they were two separate, like, entities, yes. though, right?
Right, yeah, that's
what
right.
What was it, what year was it when you went to China?
I went to China for the first time in 1979. I was actually in the very first student group to enter China after the normalization of relations. Okay. So when Nixon normalized relations, I was able to go in with this student group. And so we toured around China. It was a remarkable experience. When was the first time you went?
1985.
Okay.
I was the third American group that got a chance to train. That's when they didn't realize, treat them like Americans. They treated you like, oh, let's test your skill. Let's torture them. Let's work out 3 hours. What was it like? We our first workout was like 6 o'clock in the morning till 9 o'clock. Then go take a nap and come back at 1 o'clock and work till 3 o'clock. And then go to right. sleep for the whole time and sleep and then come back, work out again. But it was like, I mean, you know, the love for the art during that time. It was like, so somebody, and you're probably like that, when it was time to sleep, I was practicing in the woods with somebody else that wanted to give away free knowledge.
Right.
So that, I think those sort of experiences in the Orient, how important do you think, because when you say Okinawan, it sounds like that's the same sort of experience you had when you went to Okinawa, right?
Yes, that's right. I mean, the people were so friendly and willing to share their knowledge. And did you do your training at the Shaolin Temple?
No, we was at the Beijing Physical Cultural Institute.
Okay. Just recently, I had the opportunity to go to the Shaolin Temple.
Okay.
For a story I was doing in a magazine. And luckily, my producer friend, NG, I think you might have met NG when we were doing the movies, but he was the executive producer of all those movies. And Whoa. He's doing a Shaolin movie now.
Whoa.
And so he introduced me to the abbot of the Shaolin Temple. And they allowed me to train at the Shaolin Temple. And wow. I was able to go into that room where the depressions are, where the monks are trained. It was just such a phenomenal experience. It gives me chills just talking about it today because it's something I always wanted to do. And I finally got the chance to do it.
Well, that what was so awesome when I went, because it was like the first time they were allowing Americans to come and train. I mean, it was, you know, right. they didn't even have McDonald's and none of that stuff over there. So and during that time, they gave you more than what you paid for. Right. And Master Brown, because he can speak fluent Chinese, he said, no, he wanted us to stay with the people in the village. So we didn't stay in the hotels. We stayed in the village where the man was cool. making the wushu uniforms by, you know, in his house or the sewing machine and all that right. stuff. And so we got a chance to go to northern China, but then before it was time to go home, we got a chance to cross the Yellow River, that little train track back then where you had one.
right.
So we did get a chance to go to the Shaolin Temple and work out. And this is funny. During that time when we went to the Shaolin Temple in the hotel, we got a chance to work out because they were filming Shaolin Temple Part 2.
Okay.
So the first part one with Jet Li did so big, they were now filming part two. So in the hotel, we're in there sleep, and we heard all this commotion in the hallway. Boom, boom, wah, wah, boom, boom, boom. We look out and we see these guys look like Shaolin monks practicing. So we wake up, I think it's like 3 o'clock in the morning. We go out, and you know that's what's missing with the martial arts. We were just so enthusiastic to want to work. And we asked them, can you train us? So my first form that I ended up winning world championship with was choreographed by the guys from the Shaolin Temple Part 3. Those experiences are just unique, aren't they?
They sure are. And I wish I had been able to go to the Shaolin Temple back then, because Today, I went, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago. It's a money-making machine now.
Yeah.
You know, they have all these schools lining the road on the way to the Shaolin Temple, and it's all about the money now. Yeah. You know, you got to pay to get into the Shaolin Temple, and everything costs money. It's really quite a shame.
And it was, I mean, the prettiness back then, because even on that trip, I got a chance to, I don't know if you remember a guy by the name of Jeff Falcon. He did a whole bunch of movies with Cynthia Rothrock.
Yeah, I do remember him.
Yeah, he was there when I was training. I got a chance to meet Anthony Chan, who brought Wushu to America from the Beijing Wushu team. Oh, man, it was so many champions that you got. Because I think it was like a family gathering when Americans came to any country during those times. Anybody that was a prominent figure in martial arts all gathered there. They were all
because it was important, right?
Yeah,
yeah, and that's right.
And I think the separation now take away that sort of pureness and richness that truly allows you to tap down inside that love that we're talking about, that flow. I mean, what do you think?
That's right. No, I absolutely agree with you. One of the really benefits of my career is that I've been able to work with champions like yourself and Billy Blanks and Keith Vitale and Keith Hirabashi Cook and Joe Hess, all these guys, you know, who I idolized as I was coming up, and then I got a chance to meet them. And they're when you meet a true champion like yourself, Willie, there's nothing arrogant about these people. They're very down to earth, very willing to share their knowledge. In making the movies, I saw a lot of people who were arrogant, and they weren't the true champions. It was the guys that were wannabes that were arrogant and cocky and thought they knew everything, whereas the champions had nothing to prove. You know, they'd already proved it. So, you know, if you ask them, could they do that? They're like, yeah, I think I could do that. Where the other guys are, you know, arrogant and thinking they can do everything, you know?
And that's interesting because that is the warrior's mindset. I think what you're mentioning, when you participated in our call to action this year, and I thank you for that. Well, that was last year, but
sure.
And hopefully we're going to have you come back again this year. But
I'd love to, yeah.
One, you are a contributing spiritual factor to that, because all I wanted to do was do the hard path that I had to do would do a videotape and mail it out, and hope that I get a chance to, like, you know, get a call back. And I get a call back. Come on, we did Storm King. That's right, we were doing King camps and stuff.
I sure do. Well, but the reason we started the Storm King camps is because we were making these movies and we didn't have enough fighters. You know, we didn't have enough guys that could take a punch or roll down a hill or get kicked in the stomach. And so we started that to train people. We ended up hiring about 150 people from those camps because you need a ton of fighters when you make an action movie. That's for sure.
See, but, and I think that's the beautiful thing about the martial arts. I cannot stake claim to say that I created the call to action martial arts talent competition. It's like that little saying, when a student is ready, the teacher will appear. I realize that now in the day of martial arts, there's such a big gap between the talent and the opportunity to get into films, where, remember, mm-hmm. you could go to a tournament and spot talent. And that's why I got into tournaments, because, you know, it's like, man, you go to, especially Long Beach International, that's where they found Bruce Lee at. So it's like,
right.
Oh, man, you got to be good. Even Keith Cook, I mean, because he was one of my top competitors. We all right. competed together. So we all knew if you became number one, you might get a chance to get, well, I know I'm jumping because it's just so much enthusiasm. Keith Vitale, when he got on the cover of Black Belt, Karate Illustrated magazine, what did he get?
Right.
Into the Ninja. Am I right?
That's right. Yep. And then Joe Louis with that sidekick was on the cover of Black Belt, I think. He got a movie right away.
Yeah.
Those were different times back then, though, I think.
Hey, I still tell you one thing. I don't know if anybody's seen The Jaguar Live. Man, that had to be a classic. I know a lot of people ain't seen it, but if you look at Joe's personality, his whole charisma, I never seen a guy do the shuffle in the boxing mode and look so good, so fluid with it. That's like a hidden jewel that most – have you ever seen that movie before?
I have, and I had the pleasure of knowing Joe Louis, and it was a shame that he didn't get bigger than he was. You know, he should have been a much bigger star. I'm not sure what happened, but it's a shame that he didn't become a, because he had everything. He had the movie star looks, he had the body, he had the skills. It was amazing.
Yeah. I mean, he's a great friend of mine too. And before he passed, we had a chance to do some great things, but yeah, I mean, and that's what I say again with the call to action. It's just saying thank you. And I realize, I think that's the beauty in martial arts. You talked about it. When it's like you come in a selfish person. You come in wanting to be better, wanting to beat everybody. And then somewhere along the way, the teacher say, start a class for me. You're like, start a class? What am I going to do? You're like, go teach that kid, right? You know,
right.
And you go in there with no curriculum, and you got to figure out how to convince this kid who's just sitting there looking at you how to do what's in your mind that you right. want to do. And for me, I'll do a backflip. I'll do something creatively to get him to smile. And then once you entertain him, it goes back again. Once you entertain him, then you can engage him in the philosophy and the technique and the proper learning of martial arts. And that's what
that's
we wanted to do with call to action. We wanted to make it a easier process, because I do remember how it was a great time when you were doing what you were doing. You were like, you were a pioneer of it. I mean, Keith, you were the only person that was going from city to city in the United States, giving talent an opportunity to be in films. And I don't know if people remember that and give you the credit for it, but that's why I come back. I will always remember what you did for me and did for so many other people. And I think it's a better opportunity now to do it now if you have the right people that see that vision. What do you think?
Well, I think it's a different world now with everybody has a camera on their phone. Everybody is making videos and putting them up there. So, back when we were doing it, you had to have some resources to put yourself on camera. So it automatically distanced you from everybody else. This guy has a reel. He must be somebody serious. Mm-hmm. But now everybody has it. And so a lot of people, talented people can get lost in the shuffle because there's so much material out there. And that's also a shame because there's a lot of talent out there. I mean, these guys and girls that are working so hard. It's funny though. I see a lot of people that are doing these like trick kicking and things like that. I just interviewed a guy a little while ago about it, and it turns out he had no martial arts experience at all. It was all just sort of gymnastics with no soul, And I see these guys doing these kicks that seems like it's impossible to do. Like you see some of these things, you think, oh my gosh, how did that ever happen? I remember I used to go to Chuck Norris movies to see what new things Chuck would do.
Yeah.
And they were simple new things, but now you see these guys at like the Red Bull kicking competitions, they're doing things I've never seen before.
Yeah.
But they're not necessarily martial artists, and it's nice to look at, but it's more like gymnastics than it is martial arts, I think.
Yeah, and that's a whole nother subject, man. It is.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, I came in the city, that's all we did was flip. But when you got the tournaments, you didn't get a good score if you were flipping more than
right.
you were doing martial arts. The flipping, like wushu, was an enhancement to the martial arts, but it only had to be
right.
a little bit,
Yeah, that's right.
I think that's the, even when we think about, the entertainment, the films now, I think the one thing that I talk to a lot of my friends about, especially, I call him my spiritual brother, his name is Byron Mims. He was in South Central. A lot of the stuff, even his radio show, he does the writing for Black Dynamite and all of that stuff. He's like the brains behind giving me motivation to keep pushing with these things. We realize that something that's missing in the world of entertainment that fans are dying for and their mouths are open for is that genre that you contribute to and many other people did when it was blockbusters. It's called B-level martial art films. Right?
That's
remember
right.
that? That would be
oh,
how many
sure.
people were you one of those guys that couldn't wait for blockbusters to open up and just go in and I mean, you just be coming out with, like, you got tapes that'll last for what? For the next 3 weeks or something, getting that big
That's right, yeah.
blockbusters because you just waiting to see all these. How important, what is that genre? Because I don't even think people even know that there was a B-level martial art genre in existence.
Yeah, there was that. And I was, all my movies were B-movies, honestly. I remember I'm older than you, Willie, so I remember before I had those tapes, I had to drive to Washington, D.C. to Chinatown, and there was a theater in Chinatown that played martial arts movies from the morning to the night, and I would buy a ticket. I'd sit in there the whole time watching every movie that came on the screen, and just my mouth was open. I just loved every minute of it. And so that's why I really wanted to get involved in martial arts movies. And, you know, initially I thought maybe as an actor, but, you know, with a face like mine, I'm better on radio and better behind the camera. And so then as a writer, I decided I'd start writing it. But back then, there were these B movies, and they were sort of the mid-level budgets. And for a while, when in the era of Blockbuster and tapes and stuff, there was it was profitable to be in that B level, because you could spend a certain amount of money and you could make that money back. And then the bottom dropped out of that market. When they stopped selling tapes for like $80, and all of a sudden they were selling them for $5.99, there was now no money to make those B-level movies. All you could do is either big budget or D-level movies. And that's all that's left now, Willie, honestly. It's just the really, it's the movies that get made on like a 10-day budget, or it's the blockbuster movies that take 11 months or a year to make, where we were making movies that were between 6 and 10 weeks, and they ended up being, you know, in the $1 million, $2 million range back then. And it was profitable because we could get the money back and invest it on a better movie the next time around. But now I hear tales of people that are making 5-day, 6-day movies. You can't make a quality martial arts in that martial arts movie in that amount of time. You need, you know, if you want to get things right. I remember I was talking to Don Wilson, I think, and he told me that they had a take count on one of his movies, that he was only allowed 5 takes. And if they didn't get the shot in 5 takes, they lived with what they had and they moved on. And I remember with Keith Vitale on the set of Super Fights, he did one kick 65 times in order to get it absolutely right. And you just couldn't do that in the time constraints they have now.
Yeah, that's funny, because you had a chance to be on with Mr. Isaac Florentine.
Hey, Isaac Florentine, yeah.
And when I was working on WMAC Masters, I had the privilege to be, I call them my fight choreographer teachers, Pat Johnson and Isaac. And I remember one fight scene we had. I'm sorry, say that again.
No, I was just saying, yeah, I remember that, yes.
And when I was on the show, I was doing a backflip scene, and I couldn't get it for the angle that he said, get it. I ended up doing 100 backflip back somersaults. I was so mad. I mean, and that's the beauty of, once again, I think the respect factor of martial arts. I was so pissed off and upset that I stormed off. He didn't know it. I mean, I did the 100 backflips. But after the backflips, I went out and I called my teacher. I'm like, Master Brown, they're making me do all these backflips. I'm leaving. He said, but I thought you wanted this dream. You better go back in there and finish up. And what did you do? You go back in and you finish up. And I was just telling my son this. I said, that's why our relationship is like that. Because if you want that art, you got to go through pain to get it. You got to be willing to make a safe sacrifice, like you're saying. If it's 35 kicks, if it's 6, people don't even want to do 20 kicks.
Right, that's right.
Yeah. Right?
Yep.
I mean,
and I've worked with a lot of actors on set where fighters, where I don't know if you remember Corey Yuen. He was a very big martial Yuen Kuei. He was a very big martial arts choreographer. Mm-hmm. He made Rush Hour. He did a lot of really big movies, but he did several of our movies. And he was telling this one actor that he wanted him to throw a roundhouse kick with his left foot. So the actor looks at him and says, well, can I do it with my right foot? Because my right foot's better. And then Yuen Kuei would say, okay, I want you to do this kind of punch. He said, well, we wouldn't really do that kind of punch. Can I do it this way? You know? And then Yuen Kuei looks at me, you know, because I speak Chinese and he didn't speak any English. So I was translating for him. He looks at me and he goes, I'm done. And he walks off the set. He says, you do it, to the guy. He says, you choreograph it. He goes and sits down. You know, if you want to get somewhere, you got to be humble, you got to accept, and you got to be willing to put in the hard work.
And you know, Mr. Keith, I'm telling you, that's why I did Call to Action. And I mean, we didn't did auditions for, Luke Cage. I mean, some of the people that came to Call to Action was in Black Panther. And I mean, I might get in trouble for this, but I say this, when I'm sitting there and I'm looking, I want martial artists to represent martial arts. I mean, sometimes you got to take a stand for something. I know how hard it took for us to have to work to go through the training to earn a right to be on a camera with a Billy Blanks or a Chuck Jeffries and all these great martial artists or the Cynthia Rothrocks. And I feel honored to know that I worked my butt off to get there. So when I'm sitting there, and if I want to deliver a message to another generation, I think about Bruce Lee. I want you to represent something in a manner that's entertainment. And when it's time to talk about the philosophical aspect of it, to impact the world with edutainment, that's what I want. I'm sorry. I don't want the people. I see them come in. I wouldn't last at any other judging panel, because when I see some of that stuff coming in, flip, I'm like, no, here's the martial arts, man. I think you mentioned it. Things do change. Are you striving to try to be a part of the change, the new evolution of bringing back the elements of martial arts and philosophy through entertainment?
Absolutely. I think that's one of the reasons why I want to do a reboot of No Retreat, No Surrender, because I think that martial arts movies have, I don't know if you saw the movie The Raid.
Yeah.
There was this, so The Raid, I thought, was a bit like fight porn. It was just fight, nonstop fight, no soul to it. I mean, it was well done, but it wasn't a movie. It was like this long trailer of these great fight scenes. Yeah. And what we need are movies that teach people something. I mean, I don't think No Retreat, No Surrender was a great movie. Yeah. You know, when I go back to watch it, I cringe sometimes at the performances and the story and things like that. But I do know that it connected with people. You know, a week doesn't go by where somebody doesn't send me a note or send me an email that says, boy, I love No Retreat, No Surrender. Thank you for what you did. And it really touches me, because that was one of my goals when I made No Retreat, No Surrender, when I made every movie that I made, was to touch people, to interest them in the martial arts, to get people involved in the martial arts. And I think that's what we got to do today, is to find a medium where we can teach people the way that martial arts really are, because they've lost it with MMA and they've lost it with UFC. You know, it's really about who can beat the snot out of somebody else, and that's not the martial arts. The martial arts were to beat the snot out of ourselves so that we lose our pride and we lose our arrogance and we become, you know, remember the white belt turns into a black belt, and then you work out hard enough that the black belt turns back to a white belt. So, it's this full circle of humble nature.
Well, it's funny that you say that, and I think I mentioned to you that I've been writing my life story since, 1989. And each chapter is a belt. It starts off with white belt, and then the last chapter is white belt. Mm-hmm. And everybody, and me and Master Billy was talking about that. It's like we just white belts that never quit. That's all we are, man. And just let me be a white belt. Yeah. I want to have fun. So I'm hoping that that's all I'm doing. And I say to you again, call to action, and all I do is represent the opportunities that you gave me, Michael DePasquale gave me. I think when ego stands in the way of opportunity and passing on, that message of what martial arts is all about, giving it on. In order to keep it, you got to give it away. And we got to make it possible to do that through entertainment. Your movies did inspire me. Every movie Blood Moon. I'll name No Retreat, No Surrender 1, 2, and 3. I mean, all those things inspired me. And I think, maybe no one never told you that, but I'm saying it to you again. For some little kid, and that's what this show is all about, for some little kid doing COVID-19 or somebody out there, and I got to say kid or teenager that feel lost, that's in a corner not being able to get up, maybe they can turn on a streaming channel and see a martial arts film that can speak to them. Like when I think of No Retreat, No Surrender, I think about when the teacher was trying to show him a technique and he kept on trying to figure out the technique in his own way. You remember that little, I think the teacher said something about this, you ain't Bruce Lee, that freedom of trying to figure out how do I count this and how I bring about that is now those messages have to be shown in films and in music in some kind of way. And that's what we want to do. We want to be a part of bringing that back. So your movies did inspire me and inspired many other people. I mean, and in closing, if you had something to say to anyone out there that's inspired to want to get into films or just entertain the world through their expression of entertainment, be it music, be it fashion, be it a writer, what would you say to them?
Well, I think today there's a lot more opportunity to create for people. Like I said before, there's access to cameras, really high quality cameras at very low prices. So it's easier now to make something of quality. And so I think that's what people have to do. They have to just go make it. They shouldn't think about it too much. They shouldn't think, oh, I shouldn't do that. I don't belong making that sort of thing. I mean, I'm a kid from Toledo, Ohio, and I'm living in Switzerland. I've traveled all over the world. And every time I'm in a beautiful place, I think, how did a kid from Toledo, Ohio get here? And the way that I did it was I believed I could do it. And that's all you need is this belief you can do it, and then you go and do it. There are a lot of people that talk big things and never do anything.
Yes, sir.
And I'm impressed by you, Willie, because you know you made your dreams come true, and you know that's what it's all about is having the belief that you can do it and then going out and doing it.
And you know when you think of some of those people out there that you had mentioned having a big head, you have mentioned being egotistical. I mean, sometimes can you just make me think about something. When we have these competitions, one year somebody will come and they'll win and they'll get a movie short. But the next year they'll come back and they'll have a fur coat on. So while everybody else is sitting there still doing like, you know, auditioning over and over because they try to get the big part. This person down to the back room that only got a movie short with a fur coat on, telling everybody else what to do. It's like, I mean, what can we say to that sort of insanity that we never arrive? It's a daily reprieve of constantly refining your technique. Do we ever get to a point where we don't audition no more? We don't have to work out, Mr. Key?
No, we always have to keep trying to make ourselves better. That's the thing. And, you know, I think for some reason, the martial arts, it's a breeding ground for egotism. You know, people, they win a tournament or they get a belt or something. They think they're better than anybody else. But, you know, what I learned early on is that there's always somebody better.
Yes, sir.
You know, you may not have met him yet, but there's always going to be somebody better. So you shouldn't ever be this egotistical guy. You should be one to help everybody. You know, when I started in the movie industry, the pure movie industry, is really a nasty business. People are rude. They're horrible to other people. And I remember, you know, being on the phone with people and they'd say something really rude. And I'd like, did you really just say that to me? I mean, that's not how human beings talk. But I think because it's so hard to break into the movie industry, they think they need to be hard on other people. And I never felt that way. I always thought I should be as open as possible and give people the opportunity. I've been in casting sessions where the casting director has been mean to the people that are getting ready to perform. And I took the casting director off to the side and said, look, that might be the way you do it in other things, but you're not going to get a good performance if you scared the person. If they're scared or angry, you're not going to get a good performance. Our goal is to get good performances. It's not to scare people and make them think you're really a hard-nosed person. So I tried to do it a little bit of a different way. And, you know, we had a great time, and I really enjoyed all the things that we did and meeting guys like you and Billy Blanks and Keith Vitale. It was the highlight of my life, really.
Well, I thank you so much. It's an honor. And like you said, dreams do come true. I mean, I tell any kid, don't stop filming with that cell phone. Film it. Master Brown always says, your vision. Yeah. Don't get mad when people criticize it because it's your dream. You can see it. Just hold on to it. And I thank you so much because you have allowed that to happen for me. And this is just the beginning.
Well, thank you very much, too.
A new level. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Mr. Keith.
Yeah, that's right.
So we had a new level.
You're right.
It's a new frontier. New frontier, right?
Yes.
So
that's right. Let's make it happen.
Yes, sir. Thank you. And if people wanted to reach out to you and just shoot you an email, you know, ask for your autograph or anything, how would they reach out to you?
They can go on my website, keithstrandberg.com, and they can send me an email through there, and I'll get it and I'll respond to them, okay?
Your movies, if they want to find your movies.
They can just search on YouTube. I'm on IMDb, so they can look me up on IMDb, see all the movies, and then they can go on YouTube, and a lot of them are available on YouTube as well.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir, and be blessed.
All right.
The warrior's mindset is about conditioning the mind, body, and spirit. It takes practice, commitment, vision, goal setting, determination, sharp focus, respect, and discipline. Once you learn it, you can apply it to all aspects of your life. The warrior's mindset prepares you for the largest competition ever, the competition against self.